Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Don't you think that's what Mike Johnson looks like?
The elf on the shelf?
The elf from Rudolph?
They both feel like they'd have a very uncomfortable touch. Like, could you imagine giving the hug to Mike Johnson? It feels like a chill would go down your spine,
wouldn't he?
He would have to alert his son.
Right.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here in Meat Space, in real life with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Welcome to The Next Level Live. It's a very special holiday edition.
Are we live?
I mean, we're not live. We're all in person.
We're live with each other.
We're live to tape.
Live to tape, you know? With each other. And Christmas has come early. Because this morning, Politico reported that Elise Stefanik and Mike Johnson had finally buried the hatchet and gotten past things. And then 35 minutes before we sat down to tape, the Wall Street Journal released an exclusive interview with her in which she said, among other things, let me make sure I got this exactly correct. I don't want to miss anything. Whereas Kevin McCarthy was a political animal, Mike Johnson is a political novice, and boy does it show, with the House Republicans underperforming for the first time in the Trump era. She then went on to say that he couldn't be elected speaker again today. He simply would not have the votes.
It's a lie, though, that this is the most they've underperformed in the Trump era.
Well, and saying that they've never underperformed.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah,
it is ridiculous. I can't believe Elise Stefanik is lying. This has been an Iran-Iraq war for our time. And I don't know about you guys. I have been enjoying the hell out of it.
And I'm going back and forth on which side I want to be on.
This is one of those where you don't have to take sides.
Don't I?
Take America's side.
Okay. I like picking sides, though, because I was kind of reluctantly, for the first time maybe ever since I first encountered Mike Johnson in this horrible event in Lafayette, Louisiana. I guess that's a story for another time. I did not like the cut of his jib immediately. I got bad vibes from him immediately, long before he was Speaker of the House. And Elise Stefanik, I've now hated for quite a while. So, you know, it would seem natural. It's tough, like, to decide where to go. But the substance of their first dispute was over Elise Stefanik was accusing Mike Johnson of defending the deep state. Did you could look into the, like, what it was, the substance was of it? Because I was just kind of curious. I was like, what is this bill?
I'll Google that while we talk.
Yeah, I was like, what is this bill? I'm about to explain it to you. And the bill was essentially – Elise Stefanik wanted to put on an amendment that would have required, like, the FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies to alert Congress if they're going to open – a counterintelligence investigation against a politician, against a political candidate, or against someone in office. And I got to tell you, I had to side with Mike Johnson on that one.
The speaker is blocking my provision to root out the illegal weaponization that led to Crossfire Hurricane, Arctic Frost, and more. He is siding with Jamie Raskin against Trump Republicans to block this provision to protect the deep state.
Yeah. So the provision essentially would mean that, like, if you go back to 2016, if the FBI got to had reason to believe that Donald Trump might have been getting some help from the Russians, and we're going to open an investigation into it, that they would have to tell Congress, so that so that the least aphonic in the Congress could be like, hey, bro, they're on to you. I mean, like it would basically just neuter the ability to do any sort of counterintelligence investigation against elected officials. Like it basically turns everything into just partisan gamesmanship all the way down. And so I got to. At the start, I kind of had to hand it to Mike Johnson for saying no to that. And so it's like, okay, there's some responsibility being shown there. Elise is pretending to be an insane person and who does not want any investigations against politicians that are in league with foreign countries. And Mike Johnson's, protecting our beloved norms. But then as the fight goes on, it's kind of like, well, they were out of Congress for 2 months, and Mike Johnson has been a complete disaster. And it's nice that somebody's saying that, because it's contributing to the wheels coming off. And so it's just I'm kind of getting ping-ponged back and forth by who I think they're
from. Elise, they he's both, taking it from Marjorie.
I guess they both have great points about how each other are terrible. Is maybe the right way to settle on it.
Sarah,
I don't you think that's what Mike Johnson looks like? I've been trying to figure out what Mike Johnson
the elf
looks
on
like.
The shelf,
the elf from Rudolph. The claymation one from when we were kids.
Yeah.
I think he's a dead ringer. I've been trying to figure out who does Mike Johnson look like.
He also seems like they both feel like they'd have a very uncomfortable touch. Like, could you imagine giving the hug to Mike Johnson? It feels like a chill would go down your spine.
Wouldn't he?
He would have to alert his son.
Right? Or maybe only if he hugged you. Well, no, maybe if any of us.
No, probably if he hugged Tim, I suspect, would be the worst thing for me. Hold on a second. Here's my read of what is happening. So first of all, they're both bad. And they both have an agenda. One is that Elise Stefanik is running for governor. Mm-hmm. She has been relegated to a backbencher. Mm-hmm. And she has no platform by which to demonstrate she is true MAGA and that she matters actually at all. And so she has decided to pick a fight with Mike Johnson at a time when I think he is not just weak, but in danger of losing the gavel. Right. There is the knives are going to be out right now over whose fault it is that Republicans may find themselves before the 2026 election in the minority.
Lord.
He may have to hand it over. Yeah. And so I think she smells blood in the water on him. And because they've done this, thing before, when she says he wouldn't have the votes this time, what does that mean? Does that mean she wants his job?
Do you think she could pull Gates on him?
I mean, I don't know, but I think
that feels much more likely than the stupid New York governor gambit. Yeah. She has no chance to win the governor's race of New York in a off-year election of the the first Trump midterm. Like that's not going to happen.
Totally.
One House Republican told Politico that Stefanik is running for governor and frankly does not give a fuck anymore about playing nice.
Oh sure, yeah. This is just comes because she's freewheeling, truly herself, the person she was always meant to be. No, I think now Elise Stefanik, these people who are human, but her chameleon-like nature, because we know who she was prior to the Trump, means that this is a very calculating person.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is not being done because she's just like mad at Mike Johnson, right, that he's not taking her thing. Right. Calling him deep state, right? This is about, because right now as Trump's sort of star or moon or whatever waxes, as he wanes, so he's waning, there's going to be two types of people. The people who move like Marjorie Taylor Greene to say, Trump's not getting it done. He wasn't the one who was, working for you. I'm true MAGA. And then there's people like Elise who are like, Mike Johnson's not protecting Trump enough. He's part of the deep state. I'm true MAGA. And so this is all just the beginning to me of what I think is going to be, like I said, this is going to be fun to watch as people try to decide what their lane is in a post-Trump crack-up.
Just listening to you talk, I decided I'm on Mike Johnson's side. Here's why.
Is it because he looks like the elf?
No.
It's
because Elise is just so fucking gross. And it's like what she did was – and she was the worst example. Like it's hard to think about somebody who – took a more dramatic
JD
personal pivot towards Trump. JD.
But they're like Marco. They're of the same.
And they're the same.
Except that she didn't get any prizes.
Right.
That's the thing I love the most about this story.
Yeah, and so this is why I'm on the Mike Johnson side. I feel blood in the water about Elise's career.
Drive a stake through the heart
of Elise's career. And Mike Johnson is going to be able to keep muddling along. But you can kind of feel the wheels totally falling off for Elise. And she's going to be UN ambassador. This is a dream job.
She's going to be in leadership.
Back.
Right? She thought she might be VP.
Yeah.
Do you remember
she thought when she was shortlisted. Yeah.
So in her mind, and she's going to bed at night, she's thinking VP, worst case, you an ambassador, you know, maybe speaker track.
Maybe speaker.
You know, right?
Instead,
and now she's like a backbencher running a hopeless campaign for governor of New York, lashing out at Mike Johnson. I kind of hope that Mike –
the mog is all hater.
Yeah, gets the people to circle the wagons around him. And she ends up as a podcaster like Matt Gaetz. Like, I can feel her as a competitor in the podcast space soon.
Except that she doesn't have an actual constituency the way Gaetz
does. Or personality.
This is the other thing, right? Yeah. Because she's fakety fake, she is looked on by MAGAs the same way that McCarthy was. Mm. Remember, like, you know, McCarthy would show up at a Trump rally and they'd start booing him. Because they hated him.
Trump voters hated Kevin McCarthy.
I don't think they like Elise either. No.
She had part of the reason why she was able to get this, when I was reporting on her for the book, it's the craziest story, and I'm blanking on the guy's name right now. But she basically she fired all of her staff, who are all the like establishment Republican types, because you'd see the writing on the wall. And there was literally like a 24-year-old in the office who was like doing the tweets, who was MAGA, and so she like gave him full reign over the Twitter feed, where she starts tweeting like Trump, and like. Like she basically like adopted the personality of the 24-year-old MAGA guy in her office. Like it's totally phony. Nobody really buys it. It's not. There's no joie de vivre about it. You know, even some of the other MAGA people have a little bit of joy. You know, there's a little gleam in their eye when they're doing it. She doesn't seem to be enjoying any of it. I don't know. I think we might be at the end of Elise, which I would like.
She'll have to wind up as the director of the Heritage Foundation or something.
Yeah,
well, right. I refuse to choose in this battle because I think that Elise can go down and Mike Johnson can go down. I think they can both lose.
Like your optimism.
Careful. Careful.
We're here in person. Good thing you got that laptop.
This show is sponsored by OneSkin. I am a young Gen Xer, and we are not exactly the young ones on the scene anymore. Haven't been. But thanks to OneSkin, I can still be fresh-faced. Known for cult skincare favorites like OS01 Body, OS01 Face, and OS01 Eye, OneSkin stands out for their science-first approach to skin aging, delivering hydration, barrier support, and powerful longevity benefits in every product. All of OneSkin's products are designed to layer seamlessly and replace multiple steps in your routine, making skin health easier and smarter at every age. OneSkin also just launched their limited edition holiday sets, including the nightly Rewind gift set, which is one of those rare gifts that's both impressive and genuinely useful, providing an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine. Featuring their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, and a cooling gua sha tool, each component of the set is designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for a stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using code THENEXTLEVEL at oneskin.co/thenextlevel. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Okay, so we had some war crimes over the holiday weekend.
Well, the war crimes were in September, I think.
Well, but the news of the war crimes emerged over the holiday weekend when the Washington Post broke the story that after one of the supposed drug boat blowing uppings, there were a couple survivors in the water, and the U.S. military just had to take care of them.
Yeah.
Little double tap.
Seems yeet. Bad.
What'd you say?
Yeet.
What's yeet?
I don't know. It's like 6'7". It's just like yeet. Like fuck it.
Okay.
Yeet.
It's not great, but also it's caused problems for Pete Hegseth, who I think initially wanted to to brag that he gave the order, but then quickly was like, oh. Yeah.
Then accidentally revealed that he wasn't around for the second?
Well, claimed he wasn't around.
Yeah. But that's kind of embarrassing. The claim in its own right is it's like, well, where'd you have to go, bro? Like, you just had to go do your hair?
He said I was very busy.
Yeah.
He said, you know, as you can imagine, the Secretary of War has a lot of duties doing war fighting. So I had to leave.
It's like, okay. So I was sitting there in the, you know, we're watching the attack that we're doing, which is an illegal attack just for the start. The tap one was also illegal, we should say. So I'm watching that. It looks like we got the boat. And I'm like, all right, guys, I'm going to head out to dinner with my wife, and you guys stick around here. And then they couldn't get a hold of him. And like it's taking his story at face value. It's kind of it's an embarrassing story, like the news story. Right. Like, he's not a war.
His version of it
is,
I'm not a war criminal. I'm just incompetent.
Yeah.
Those are the only two options for this story.
And he's hung out his admiral.
Well, it's right. It's like, this.
I support the guy who did the war crimes, but if you're looking for somebody to do war criming,
the tweet that he did blaming
Admiral Mitch.
Is that Mitch? No.
His first name is Mitch. I don't know what his last
Admiral,
name is.
Admiral, I know it's somewhere.
I think Admiral Mitch is fine.
But hanging him out to dry the way that he did it is he was like, I have his back 100%. The guy who gave the order, who was definitely not me, and I was, first of all.
And who didn't consult me, just so we're all very clear. No one asked me about the war criming.
But I had to put my phone in a skiff.
What he says happened is he's sitting there watching it. They blew up the boat. And at that point, he was like, it was fog of war and I left. Right. Can you imagine being like in charge of an operation where you've just and also, because this is back in September, this is like one of his first blow-ups. It's like the first time they did it.
Yeah.
They have subsequently done 20 more. And so when they did it, and then they shot the two guys in the water, they never did it again. They picked up – why not is because
if it was fine and it was important to American national security, which he said at the cabinet meeting yesterday, he said, you know, look, this is – we are showing the narco-terrorists our lethality.
Yeah.
And we're war fighting, and you namby-pambies in your air-conditioned offices in the media don't understand what it's like to be a real man doing push-ups like me. And you know, so we did what we had to do to keep America safe. So why aren't they still keeping America safe by killing survivors?
Well, not only did they not kill them, but the next time there were survivors, they returned them, which is an admission – in my opinion, that they realized the first time they did it, that maybe that wasn't strictly legal as it comes to the way in which we engage with the people who we haven't even proven are narco-terrorists when we kill them. And so
have we interviewed those guys? Can
somebody go find them?
Can somebody track those two guys down, the ones we gave back to Venezuela? I don't know. What are they? Are they back to just, you know, are they hiding in the Trendoraqua bunker?
Wait, can I just read this to you?
Yeah.
Hegseth says that a couple hours passed before he was made aware that a second strike had taken place. I did not personally see survivors because that thing was on fire and was exploded. And fire, smoke, you can't see anything. You got digital. There's this thing called fog of war.
Mm. He thinks that means literal fog, smoke.
Heg says Seth, he observed a live video of the initial attack before he moved on to my next meeting. Because what could be – what?
That
what
next
could,
meeting must have been super important.
Super important. Also, why so they are trying to act like they are not hanging this guy out to dry, the admiral, which of course they are. I do not understand what incentive that admiral would have not to just, excuse the pun, but blow them up on the spot and say, of course he gave me this order.
He likes his job.
Well, I mean, that can't happen unless, right. I mean, he can't go leaking this stuff. He could testify under oath. Mm-hmm. If some congressional committee subpoenaed him,
which is going to happen,
right? I mean, he should speak out of school, but like that's not something that senior military guys do.
Yeah, no, certainly not somebody.
But that's my point. But my point is not he needs to go to the press right away. My point is that when he is called up in front of Congress, he has no. He like this is not a guy who. Why would he? He's not going to take the fall for them.
And what the hell do I know? But like, the story seems pretty true. You know, and Pete saw the video game blow up. He's like, I don't know, I've got other stuff
to do. Just
like
on Call of Duty,
I gotta go do makeup or push-ups or whatever. I've got 9 kids. I don't know. The story seems pretty good. And the initial post story never said I don't have it in front of me, but it never said explicitly that Pete gave the order. It said that Pete said there should be no survivors. And so so the news story is pretty consistent, actually, with the Washington Post reporting, right? Which
and
is
there
that,
is a, like, so did he say it out loud, or was this a Godfather style, oh, it would be terrible if something happened to them?
Yeah. Right. So then it's like, then the Admiral, like, made this call because Pete had said no survivors. Like, so we'll see, and when they all testify. But the Admiral might not, like, really have anything to torture your pun again, blow him up with, right? Like, if the true story was that, like, you know, Pete said no survivors, but then the Admiral, you know, you're not – how do you interpret that? We got these two guys in the water.
Do people give orders that are that open to interpretation? Actually, well, now that you say that, there was one quotation that okay, it says, this is protect Pete bullshit, one military official who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss internal conversations. And he told this to the Washington Post. Levitt's statement, because the White House has come out to defend Pete and the strike. Levitt's statement left it up to interpretation who was responsible for the second strike that killed the two survivors, a separate military official said, imploring the White House to provide clarity on the issue. Because here's the thing. The killing of those two people, I do think it has been widely established now. Everyone agrees that was illegal. It was a war crime. I don't think
all
there's
of
much
it's illegal, but this goes from merely illegal to war crime.
Yeah. Well, this is like statutorily, they have rules against doing this.
Yeah.
And so it feels like now they are in the question of who gave that ultimate illegal order.
It is funny to me how MAGA has sort of danced around this, because MAGA is formally in favor of war criming. Right, this is like one of the things that Trump has done with pardons. Hegseth wrote a whole book about this. They love soldiers that commit war crimes.
Yeah.
And so you would think if they were going to be true to themselves, they would just like own this.
Yeah.
Be like, yeah, you're damn right we did. Those guys deserved it, right? Yeah, we double tapped them. Yeah. What? And instead it's like, well, it's fog of war. Who can say?
Is part of the reason that they're doing that is that they don't have any support for the war? Like, I think that if it was a different situation, you know, where, you know, if this was post 9/11 or whatever, right, like that where U.S. had been attacked and there was a war that there was a lot of support for, who's for this? Like, that's the craziest thing about all this. Like, we're doing these war crimes for a war that, like, literally only Marco is for. Like, it's hard to find anyone else who's, like, super excited about this.
Trump is. He hates Maduro and
they had a call.
Yeah, I know. Well, did you see his did you see him when they were like, did you talk to Maduro? And he was like, no comment, but yes. It's like, sharp as a tack, Sleepy Don.
I did see that. I guess Trump seems, I think, for it maybe ambivalently. Like, he likes strong stuff. He likes that we're bombing people. But, like, no, it's hard to find. I feel this about this way similarly to how I did about the big bill. Was it like
the beautiful one?
Yeah. Do you see a lot of clips of people that are out there that are like really owning this?
Oh, thank God,
you
know,
like, and like huge champions, people that are like, this is, you know, Capitol Hill people that are like, this is really my bag. I'm going to be the one that's out front on this, doing a lot of interviews. Like, popular pundits. I mean, like, the only like clip that's been going around of somebody like really getting excited about this was Megyn Kelly's torture porn.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she's excited. She's getting. I can't do it when Sarah's right in my face. I was going to say, do something gross, and I just can't do it with you sitting right there. It's easier when I'm on my computer and you're 2,000 miles away. But she's getting hot and bothered.
Yeah, no, I heard she wanted, like, she wants to see them suffer.
Bleeding.
Yeah.
She doesn't know who they are.
From their whatever?
Yeah. She doesn't know who they are or what they did. She suspects that they're drug dealers.
Well,
but she wants to see pain.
I can shed some light on that.
Yeah.
Because during the, I think it was the cabinet meeting yesterday, during we were told that each of these boats kills 25,000 Americans. I would like to see some math on that.
Yeah.
So they can't tell us what kind of drugs are on the boat or how much of them are on the boat. So it's not clear to me how they get to
what kind of drugs. You know more about drugs.
I know a little bit about drugs.
What is it? Cocaine?
what is – so that is the whole thing about all this. Like,
seems like a bad business model for cartels if their drugs are designed to kill all the people who buy them.
Right. So Venezuelan drugs, just as a baseline for an adult drug talk, don't come to America.
Oh.
Like, we don't get drugs from Venezuela. I mean, not zero, but it's not in the top five countries. There is some cocaine that goes from Venezuela to the Caribbean countries. Mm. And so there's like kind of some weird geopolitics about this. Like, some of the Caribbean countries are like excited for Trump because they don't like the cocaine that's coming into their countries. But we don't get cocaine from there. We get from Colombia and Mexico. Now, some cocaine goes from Colombia through Venezuela up here. So it's possible that it's Colombian cocaine that we're taking out. Even still, and I'd have to Google this, but like, I don't think that there were 25,000 coke. This is the Joe Rogan thing. It's like, who's his assistant? Like, can you Google this for me while we're talking? non-fentanyl related cocaine deaths. I would find it hard to believe that there are 25,000 a year in the country. I don't believe so.
I do think – at one point, didn't they tell us 300 million lives were saved by cutting – I mean, these guys do – what was George W. Fuzzy Math?
If each of these boats kills 25,000 Americans, then the Chinese could wipe out the entire population of America, every man, woman, and child, by simply sending 13,200 of these drug boats off the Venezuelan coast. Do you think their military understands that? Like, they don't even need their nuclear weapons.
The whole country would have to do drugs. That's the other fact I don't have. Like, what percentage of the country does cocaine? Like 15%?
Well, this is why I asked about cocaine. I assume that they mean fentanyl.
Yeah, so 29,000. This is our friends at ChatGPT. 29,000 in 2023. 29,000 overdose deaths involving cocaine. I'd have to imagine a big proportion of those are fentanyl.
Cut with fentanyl.
Right.
That's been the cocaine overdose issue. It's all been fentanyl. And that is what I want to know. If this is an attempt to stop fentanyl coming into the country.
But it's not.
But it's not, because that's not where the fentanyl is coming from.
No. And this is why why is so much effort being put into creating a rationalization for this war that nobody wants is the other thing. Like, the other thing that was going around, I don't know if you saw this, was they're trying to make an argument that that the trend to Aragua in Venezuela has a connection to Al Qaeda in Africa.
Oh.
And so they're going to use that to to put this under the 2001 AUMF it was either trafficking or there was some relationship. But it's straining any kind of rationale for this. But again, it's like, why? The answer that some people give then is oil. And it's like, but Trump would do deals with dictators.
And so Russia.
Why not?
Why don't you do a deal with Maduro?
Why don't you just call him? If it's about oil, why don't you just call Maduro and trade oil with him? He would do that. Like, Maduro would be thrilled about that. Trump doesn't care. Trump doesn't care about the human rights. He doesn't care about the drug dealing. He just pardoned the Honduras guy. The immigration thing is, I guess, what it is really related to.
I think it's all about that.
Right. It's like creating a rationale for the internal immigration enforcement.
Well, he said yesterday at the cabinet meeting that they're going to start doing the land next and that they know all the routes.
Yeah.
And that actually it's a lot easier to do it on the land. I did think to myself, so if it's easier, why didn't they start with the land?
Did he wake up? Yeah.
If it's easier to do the land, why did you start with the sea?
That's a great point.
Doesn't make any sense.
None of it makes any sense, but actually this goes to a bigger point about Trump and it and him sleeping in the Oval Office. He is 10, 11 months in, right? And this idea, the thing that I heard over and over again about Joe Biden and his mental decline was a specific thing then that voters did where they said, so he's not in charge. Someone's pulling his strings.
Ooh.
And what's interesting to me, as Trump slept through his meeting while Rubio talked about this, is that it does seem actually like maybe Trump is building his ballroom and like there's some combination of Stephen Miller and Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance who are like, yeah, let's go do this. Because your point about who wants to do this, it seems like a bespoke interest of a cabinet member who's like, Trump doesn't care. Like, as long as we just go do it, let's
and
do
this
it.
This is the real answer, because that ties what I was just saying about the immigration enforcement. Stephen Miller wants this so that you can do, because it's rationalizing getting rid of all the Venezuelans, emergency powers. And so this is just a Miller and Rubio op.
Which is why they are starting to call it. To me, the flip from the drug boats to narco-terrorism was notable as a designation, because they know it once they say that it's terrorism, it gives them a different level
different
of
toolbox.
Yeah, different toolbox, yeah. Exactly.
Does Hank 80% of the cocaine involved deaths also were dealt with opiates, such as fentanyl. Yeah.
Does Hank Smith survive this?
That's a good question.
You saw the Loomer scoop.
No.
You didn't? Laura Loomer is one of the new Pentagon press officials.
Sure.
Laura Loomer, who is maybe the most responsible member of MAGA these days.
Laura Loomer
is – that wrong?
I don't know. I would say that's probably wrong. I'm sure I could find a more responsible member of MAGA. I will say, though, that you got to trust her reporting. I mean, I do think that Laura Loomer's got more of a bead on what's happening internally at the Department of Defense than most reporters.
Donald Trump.
But what did you say?
And Donald Trump. She said that the Secretary of Army, Driscoll, who's buddies with Vance, is working on a coup. He's trying to coup Hegseth.
Is that a bad coup
or a good coup?
Here's the thing.
I think it depends on which side of the argument you're on. Bad for her, because she's a neocon MAGA. She's a pro Israel. She's a Zionist MAGA. She's a Zionist MAGA, and Driscoll and Vance don't care about Israel. I think it's her concern. I guess I can't speak for them personally, but I think that Laura likes Hegseth in there, because he's more of like a Fox News MAGA that still wants
and to. And he probably is giving her access that she thinks would get cut off if somebody's slightly more responsible. But here's to your question about are his days numbered, the thing about him throwing the admiral under the bus and all of the blind quotes now coming out of the Defense Department is that people now in his own department know this is not a guy who's going to stand with us. He will give us illegal orders and then hang us out to dry. And my guess is that's a pretty grave sin. And so the revolt from within may be what gets him. But also, because now you do have Republicans in the Senate, like Roger Wicker, who is like a normie-ish Republican. This is all the really normal ones are gone. Yeah, but like comparatively, as the curve keeps shifting, he is on the more normal side. He said they're going to hold hearings. And so they are going to have oversight hearings on this, and Republicans are going to lead them. He's on armed services. And I think that there are probably still one or two people who care about war crimes on the Republican. Not a lot. Not Eric Schmidt and not Mark Wayne Mullen. Like, they're all jumping to Hegseth's defense because they're regulars on Fox News. But some of the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, far be afraid to be pretend like I'm an expert on like the Kremlinology of what's happening inside the Trump military. But we know from reporting at this point that there is kind of a fissure a little bit with like how isolationist to be, with Vance being on the more isolationist side and Driscoll being kind of representative of that. If you kind of add that wing with what you're saying, which is that there are some career military guys that are just like, at least this other guy, Driscoll, is a military person that I know that I could deal with. It's not hard to imagine, there being, support internally for making a change like that. And Trump is going to have to change something next year. You just know
that's the big question, right?
And I mean, there was some Susie Wiles stuff going around, but something's going to have to be changed. So, and I don't know if you're Trump. Trump probably likes Hegseth. The argument for Hegseth saying goes back to your sum of all fears argument, which is like the most important thing for Trump is that he is a loyalist in that slot. And does he really want J.D. Vance's guy in there?
Nope.
Probably not. Nope. Right? And so that would be the argument for Hegseth.
Yeah. There's one other argument for Hegseth, which is we are in a moment of Trump and the administration trying to normalize military presence, military violence, military action. This is National Guard in the street stuff. This is all that. And he kind of needs that pliant. This is why it would not shock me at all if it was Wiles who's the brakes on, I think, some of the worst stuff, and maybe one of the only people who's a bit of a brake on some of the worst stuff, who goes over somebody like Hegseth, who's basically a willing soldier, again, no pun intended, in Trump's overall, building of the architecture to have the military be his personal, you know, plaything.
Yeah.
So who goes first, Hegseth or Christine Helm? Christine, there have been some reports going around that she could be out as early as January. She seems to be feeling that at the cabinet meeting. She said that Donald Trump kept the hurricanes away this year.
Well, he had a Sharpie and he redirected them and he said none of them hit.
And she's recommending to him that he institute a travel ban on every damn country that's been flooding our nation with killers, leeches, and entitlement junkies.
Why would they get rid of Noam?
I don't know.
So that's why it's just sort of like, I don't know.
Things aren't going well.
Is somebody mad? Somebody jealous? Somebody mad at Corey Lewandowski? She's spending a little too much time in Lewandowski town. You know, who knows? There might be internal machinations, but she's doing what he wants.
Yeah.
Well, that's the question, right? At some point, is he going to look up and say, I'm at 32%?
Yeah, but I don't think Noam's one of the people.
We've got to start going the other way.
Who goes? And look, Christy Noam right now is really working for the 2028 presidential nomination. And the only thing that I could think is that Corey Lewandowski, who is her personal operative, he is throwing.
What do you mean?
Well, I think he'd like to be first man on the side.
First pool boy.
Yeah, I definitely think he's the first side piece of this Homeland Security Department.
Yes.
That we know of.
That's true.
Who knows what Tom Ridge was doing?
That guy was wild.
Do not besmirch the name. It's Pennsylvania's greatest governors.
Love Tom Ridge.
This show is sponsored by ZBiotics. From holiday parties to festive toasts by the fire, the holidays are full of moments to share a drink with friends and family, whether you're celebrating a year's end win or just relaxing after a busy day. Being ready for the next morning still matters. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. I run a work hard, play hard kind of ship at the Bulwark here. That's not true. It's really just a work hard, then work harder ship. We don't need to dwell on that. Everyone here takes their ZBiotics, and before our Christmas party tonight, we'll all be downing them before the first drink of the evening. That's a thing. It's actually happening tonight, for real, in the real world. Then we'll be back to the content mines tomorrow, trying to make more takes for all of you, our dearest friends. Make the most of every toast this holiday season. Just don't forget to bring pre-alcohol along for the ride. Go to zbiotics.com/next level to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use Next Level at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/next level and use the code NEXTLEVEL at checkout for 15% off. All right, so while we're talking about immigration stuff, another beautiful thing that happened after Thanksgiving was that – so we get that horrible – you and I taped the secret pod on Wednesday morning, and I said at the beginning of the show, we're taping this on Wednesday morning, so if something important happens and you hear it on Friday and we don't talk about it, that's why we're sorry in advance.
Yes. That was good.
And then something important happened, and horrible shooting of two National Guards people. Girl from West Virginia died. 20 years old, I think she was. Just awful. And the president responded by calling to have reverse migration as the thing, the only thing that could really cure what ails this country, and saying that he wants to start trying to strip the naturalization, the people who disturb the peace. And I mean, we're just doing it all, I guess.
Well, it's the next thing. So when we taped about the actual shooting, he had tweeted that night about how he wanted to basically start denaturalizing people.
Yeah.
And so now the re-immigration or the
– Remigration.
Remigration. It's basically the self-deportation is what he wants, except it's not self-deportation for illegal immigrants or people who are here in an undocumented way. It is for legal. It's for people who are here legally. Right. Yes. So he is both now talking about denaturalizing people and telling people who are naturalized American citizens or just American citizens from countries he doesn't like Somalia,
or
to
green
go
card
home.
People, people that are in the process, yes. right? It's like we're never gonna approve you, so you might as well go home.
So go home.
Right.
It's funny. I thought they all said they loved a big, beautiful door and the big, beautiful wall, and they wanted everybody to do it the right way. Was that not true?
I think it's quite clear. That is not what is interested. It's funny. He really does just sound like a really old man who's had a couple of drinks complaining about like the garbage migrants who come here and
kids
they don't
these
work.
Days, with their loud music and their boom boxes.
It's worse than that also just because like what all of the other implications are. And I mean, JVL might be tickling your pickle with us. We won't have the numbers for a little bit, but I think that we're going to have population decline in America this year. Like population decline where, you know, because birth rate's low, we have a lot of olds and we're not bringing any people in and we're deporting a lot of people. You add all those things up, like that we're going to have actual population decline. And their plan, seeing that, looking at where we are, they're like, you know what we really need to do for next year is like ratchet that up. Yeah. We need more people leaving, fewer people in. We're not doing anything about the birth rate issue. And so like we are going to be in the company of, you know, your Ugandas, Venezuela, friends in Venezuela, Syria. Well, Syria will actually have a population
Russia.
Increase next year, but Syria in the past few years.
Yep.
You know, Russia. Like those are the countries that have negative net migration and population decline. And like that's what's going to be happening here. So, I mean, obviously like the human rights element of it is terrible, the racism is terrible, but like it also, you know, just for like the economic prospects of the country, it's a total nightmare.
Well, and the economic prospects, so and the social safety net. I mean, the Ponzi scheme that is Social Security relies on the idea that you have a broader population base to take care of. And this, we are not talking enough about the boomers retiring, needing greater health care. We are now have a nursing shortage. We are going to telling my people who have come here that are green card holders or who come here for better economic conditions. A lot of them are home health aid workers or work in the healthcare system. Like, who's going to take care of the aging boomer population as they like age into that the caretaking years? There's not going to be
the AI robots because we're deregulating AI completely.
Yeah,
so we'll have AI robots do it. David Sachs is on that. Is on the job.
They really have not thought through the broader policy implications of what they're doing.
Or maybe they have, and they just want to try. Like they're just like, this is our chance. We're going to make this. We're going to make the country whiter, and we're going to stagnate things. And then, you know, and then we'll be starting from a better baseline the next time the globalists get back in charge.
Here's Trump talking
about – give it a whirl. They can give it a whirl.
Here's Trump at the cabinet meeting talking about Somali immigrants. When they come from hell and they complain and do nothing but bitch, we don't want them in our country. Let them go back to where they came from and fix it. At which point J.D. Vance –
pound the table. Yes, Mr. Trump.
Like Ed McMahon.
Fucking hate J.D. Vance so much. It's also sick. The other thing is just, you know, look, as the immigration softy here, you have to say, who loves America more than the recent immigrants? It's the people that love America the most. They love America way more than the MAGA people do. All they do is complain about America and shit on it. But they're white and they're from here, so that's okay. And
have you ever been to a naturalization ceremony?
Yeah, of course.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
They are the most American, uplifting, like remind you of what it is we're doing here type thing.
They're going to be a hot ticket soon. They're going to be on StubHub to go watch them because they're only going to be like 12 next year. It's a limited supply for people that want to have a little patriotic spirit.
So, Sarah, I remember being on the focus group with you recently, and one of the things that I've heard in almost every focus group show, whenever there's immigration, there's almost always somebody in one of the groups who says, I'm an immigrant and I came here the right way and I'm for Trump because I just want people to come in the right way. And I have said various times that are these people just stupid because they think that Trump wants people like them here? No. No, he doesn't want people like them here. And he starts by drawing the line with like, oh, it's the drug dealers and the murderers and the rapists. And then he just keeps – like this is how this goes all the time everywhere. Like at any time there is like line drawing, this is all like the Carl Schmitt stuff. This is pure reactionary eugenic type stuff. Yeah. And these people, are they just dupes? Do you know, like the, so, J.D. Vance and Donald Trump don't want them here?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about the Hispanic voters.
Anybody who isn't like Italian or Irish immigrant.
Okay.
You know, people say like, oh, I immigrated to this country. I don't mean my parents were at Ellis Island in 1914.
Yeah.
I mean.
The Indian Americans for one, it would be another community. Right. There's a big conversation about this week, you know, because yeah. I forget who had the article, but they're, you know, Indians had been moving towards towards Republicans over the last few years. And yet, you know, now they're being targeted explicitly know, by a lot of MAGA influencers.
Yeah. I do wonder what Kash Patel and Vivek and Usha Vance, like what kind of – because the anti-Indian sentiment that has gone just insane across MAGA.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's more of that. And this is to me one of the great sort of overreach is not the right word. But as MAGA further radicalizes, further distills, it will seek more purity among its ranks. And they will – people who in the beginning when Trump provided sort of the big tent with the red hat and anybody could put on the red hat, I do think some of that goes away. But to your question about like are people stupid, I do think a lot – like you take a lot of things for granted. I mean first of all, just for average voters, nobody who was born in America knows anything about the immigration system because they've never dealt with it. So that's one thing. So when they say just come the right way, they assume that somewhere there's a workable immigration system for people who are coming the right way.
We were all born in America. We know that it's not like that.
JVL, come on, man. We are professional political analysts. Like people actually listen to us because we know. Comparing us to like regular people who live their lives.
No, I don't believe in the soft bigotry of low expectations, Sarah.
It's not low expectations. It's just like humans behaving humanly in their information, whatever. So that's one thing. The second thing is Trump did talk a lot about criminals. And so for people who hear what they want to hear, which is this is an explanation, not a justification, but I know people hear what they want to hear. And they heard Trump's going to be good on the economy and we do want something done about the borders, right? But Trump has gone – I was doing something where I was looking back at the Hispanic voters and what they said. And he has dropped with Hispanics for two reasons. Like he is so far – I mean nobody has sort of abandoned him faster than Hispanic voters who they heard are going to secure the border, which they were good with, and we're going to have a strong economy. They and instead they're dealing with the excesses in their communities. They see it. Mm-hmm. They see the excesses more closely.
Kavanaugh now, stops, right?
Kavanaugh stops?
Yeah, the Supreme Court has made it. So the ones, they can stop and detain anybody who looks Hispanic or is overheard speaking Spanish anywhere and, you know.
Yeah.
It's up, ask for your papers.
It's up to ICE and HHS. You should have judgment. Carry your papers. And, you know, Brett Kavanaugh believes that if you get detained and excessive force is used, it'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still have recourse.
Yeah.
That's there we go. After the Jubilee interview, I was – or at the Jubilee debate, like one of the points I kept making was I was talking about George Redis, who did the Home of the Brave video, which people should go check out. He's in there for 3 days. And like some of the pushback I got on social media from MAGA folks was like – I mean, you act like this is fascism, but he can still sue the government. It's like, okay. I mean, he's a U.S. citizen that was put in a hole for 48 hours. I guess he can
just
still
sue. Just on his way to work.
Yeah, I guess he can sue the government still. I mean, and if you want to say that's how a liberal democracy is supposed to work, I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree.
This show is sponsored by Wild Alaskan Company. You don't have to live by the water or down the street from a great market to have access to seafood that can change everything for you. Wild Alaskan Company is the best way to get wild-caught, perfectly portioned, nutrient-dense seafood delivered directly to your door. Trust me, you haven't tasted fish this good. That's how I've enjoyed coho salmon and Pacific cod at home. It made me feel like I was transported to a different place altogether. It's like we sort of joke about me being in my Manhattan brownstone at home, but the wild Alaskan stuff is legit the best seafood I've ever had, better than you'll get at a five-star restaurant. It's also sustainably sourced, wild caught from Alaska. Every order supports sustainable harvesting practices, and your membership delivers flexible shipments, expert tips, and truly feel-good seafood. If you're not completely satisfied with your first box, Wild Alaskan Company will give you a full refund, no questions asked, no risk, just high-quality seafood. Not all fish are the same. Get seafood you can trust. Go to wildalaskan.com/next level for $35 off your first box of premium wild-caught seafood. That's wildalaskan.com/next level for $35 off your first order. Thanks to Wild Alaskan Company for sponsoring this episode.
We were going to talk about this giant 5,500-word triad I wrote today. It took me 2 days to do it that nobody's read. But
I read it.
You don't have to.
I read the whole thing. Every word of it.
I read it, and I liked it. And you're going to talk about it on Secret.
We will talk about it on the Secret.
And I just want to say, just for the record, that part three of the triad is the best part. So if you're one of the people out there that open it and are just like, I'm getting a little bored or whatever, this is too many words for me, I'm in the TikTok generation, just make it to part three. Because in part three, you make the argument for why people should be less ashamed to fight on behalf of liberalism. And I think that's an important theme for me over the last month, as I'm just like, fuck it. Not only am I a liberal now, but I'm a radical liberal. I'm extreme. And we're going to fight these illiberal motherfuckers and not apologize for, you know, liberalism's vulnerabilities. I thought that was really good. So anyway, you guys can hash out the rest of it later.
So instead, we are going to talk about your interview with Olivia Nuzzi. Nuzzi? What is he? I feel like you and I pronounce it differently.
Nuzzi is the correct way to pronounce it.
Okay.
And that's because it's what she prefers. And, I think everybody should go what they prefer.
Sure.
I do say this. I kind of feel like – and so my daughter has a French name, and it's like technically you would pronounce it Toulouse, right? That's how they would pronounce it. But like that sounds pretentious and ridiculous. It's just like we just call it Toulouse. It's America. And, that's kind of where I land on all this stuff. Maybe that's the old Republican in me. I just feel like we should just Americanize all the names. I think it's kind of silly when I hear the announcers on TV like kind of rolling the R's when they're talking about people. It's kind of like it's okay. We can – it's not – I feel like we can just Americanize the names now. No?
This is not the part I want to talk about.
Okay.
So I just want to throw it to you guys. Get a little after-action report, kind of a big interview.
Yeah, everybody. A lot of people have thoughts about it. I'll tell you that.
A lot of people have feelings about it.
A lot of people have feelings and thoughts about it. And they've been sharing them with me, which I do appreciate. Before I talk about Olivia, if you don't mind, like there's just one element of the feedback that I do want to just address. And I feel like we've talked about this before, but it's important sometimes to refresh stuff. And that is – like there was a big criticism, particularly on the Bulwark Reddit that I saw, that where the word kept coming up of like platforming, like why would you platform this person? And and I want to address the Olivia part of that in a second, but I just like I've like changed my view of this in the last year, and I totally like I think it'd be wrong to platform somebody like to have them write an article for the Bulwark for them to lie. Like I think that would be like providing a platform that we should not do, right? And that would be like one example of that. Or like doing a Theo Von interview where like you don't know anything about the subject and you're just like, just gaslight me, right? And there's no questions. Like I think that's a fair criticism. But like overall, I just think like the left made like a huge mistake over the last 5 years by deciding the right thing to do was to try to otherize – you know, there's this conversation like, don't normalize MAGA. Mm-hmm. Like as part of that, it's like we should otherize them. We should put them in a little box over in the corner, not engage with anybody over there. And I just don't know how you can like look at the last 10 years and think that that was a winning strategy. I think that was really wrong. Like one example of that comes to mind I was just thinking about on the plane today is like, remember when there's the big protest of Joe Rogan or people were protesting Spotify? Like, we're going to cancel Spotify because Joe Rogan said – I forget what he said, the R word or something. And like the result of that has been like making Joe Rogan unbelievably powerful and weakening liberalism in a lot of ways. And like I think it's part of the Charlie Kirk debate. Like if you look at like I love like just using these two people as examples, not to like pick on her, but like if you look at Charlie Kirk, who like really did in a lot of ways in bad faith, but like went and engaged like outside of his bubble a lot and like offered to debate people, wanted to go debate on campus, or like, you know, like Rachel Maddow or something. And Rachel, who I like, Like being in a – like Rachel did doesn't do that. Like on her show, she doesn't have on people outside the bubble. And again, that's fine. That's everybody's choice. But like I think like obviously Charlie had more influence, right, like by going out and engaging people. And so like my just view is like a general – and this isn't really – a lot of this doesn't apply to Olivia in particular, but just kind of broadening it out just so people know where my head's at. Like I look back at my show over the last year. It's like a December report card for myself and think I – had on too many people that agreed with me on everything. Like that's my self-critique. And like the audience critique is like if you ask them like what the worst shows were, you see it in the comments. Like they could all list it out. They're like Jason Calacanis or Joe Manchin. Or, like, you go down the list. And I'm like – and so I just think that's like a little bit of a misalignment between me and some – not everybody, some members of the audience. And like that's – and I don't – and I'm going to like do more of that next year. And I think it's okay for people to like skip shows if they don't want to do that and all that. But like I don't think it's interesting or stimulating for me intellectually or helpful to like just like have on Never Trumpers every day. We're going to have on a lot of Never Trumpers. We'll do that. A lot of Tom Nichols. Don't worry. Not a David French. But anyway.
Love those guys.
Yeah, great guys. So that's just like a broader thing about the feedback that I wanted to say.
Wait, can I just hit the platforming thing 1 second? There's also a difference between – because I will defend very strongly the editorial judgment we all made to do the interview. But platforming someone is like when Tucker takes – some unknown guy who's like, no, the Nazis were the good guys. And like, you've never heard of that.
And now he's the most famous historian. He's the best number one historian podcast in the country.
Yeah, that is platforming. Yeah. That is taking someone who doesn't have a platform and giving them your large platform in order to just flood the zone with garbage. Yeah. That is different than somebody who is at the center of a conversation both about the nature of journalism and its ethics. Who is at the center of a firestorm and controversy, did things that actually like directly impacted the government we now have. And so like that is a person worthy of asking questions to. Yeah.
And so to that point, like on the Olivia thing, I don't want to belabor it. Like my short take on her is I don't think that she should have been doing any of these interviews at all. And I would say that to her. It's not a secret thing. She seems to be not – and we went over this in the interview where I feel like the one point of the interview that was the most notable for me was when I said to her, I was like, there are two kinds of books you could have written. You could have written one book that just sort of – you know, which was one you did, I think, which was kind of write how you want to write and you're going to let the people decide – judge for themselves and you're going to, you know – use your own style and put it out there. And then there's another book, which is like a tell-all, which is like I'm going to be fully honest and like rip off the Band-Aid and do a tell-all because I want people to know everything that happened. And I assumed that there would just be agreement that she did the first, right? But she interjected and was like, I take it you don't think I did that. You don't think that I was honest, fully honest. And I was like – I just thought that
you wouldn't use the guy's names.
Yeah, right. It just wasn't a tell-all. Yeah. And I think that she was keeping her cards close to her vest in a lot of different elements. Mm-hmm. The one that I really leaned in on was related to RFK, because I think that's the thing that matters more than like her tiff with her ex-boyfriend and his Substack. And I still came away from that thinking like she just isn't willing or ready to go there on RFK. And to me, that's like the most damning part of all this is that RFK is now the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And I think that both Ryan Liz's Substacks about this that have now been written, that are now written 10 months after he's already been in there and after all this damage has been done – don't really serve any journalistic purpose. I don't think a book that comes out 10 months after he's already been in there doesn't serve much. They both obviously knew a lot of damning information about RFK in the period between when Donald Trump won and he became the Secretary of Health and Human Services and didn't tell anybody about it. And to me, like that was the part that I think had the biggest impact on where we are as a country right now and had the most biggest impact on people, and that was the part I wanted to focus on. Just the only other thing, just circling back to the platform that I want to hear your guys' take is everybody's going to have their own views on stuff, and I'm happy to take feedback and everything. With the Olivia thing, there was like a common piece of feedback I received is, I don't like her. I think that what she did was bad, and I watched the interview, and I don't like her, and I think the way she did was bad, and I'm upset that you gave her an opportunity to talk and platform her, and you weren't, and that you were too nice to her. And I'm like, I mean, if you look at the comments, I don't think that anything about the interview did her a lot of favors. I think that the interview revealed about Olivia what a lot of people thought about her going in, which is that she made a really bad judgment call and she's not ready to take full ownership for it. And to me, it's kind of like, it'd be one thing if people came out of that, if it was like you were the one commenter that was like, I think she's terrible, and everybody else was like, great job, Olivia. I could understand why you would think that, like, maybe the interview didn't do a good job of revealing, the truth about her and her behavior. But, I don't – like, that's like the one – kind of feels like people got what they wanted but still were unhappy about it. And that's okay. People have a right to be unhappy about things. Even sometimes I get what I want and I'm still unhappy about it. That's a human. That's human.
When the holiday season rolls around, it feels like there's a party every weekend. All those sugary drinks are adding up. This season, I'm going to reach for Soul's out-of-office gummies instead. Same fun vibe, low in calories, and zero hangover. Soul's a wellness brand that believes feeling good should be fun and easy. They specialize in delicious hemp-derived THC and CBD products designed to boost your mood and help you unwind. Their best-selling out-of-office gummies were designed to provide a mild, relaxing buzz, boost your mood, and enhance creativity and relaxation. With five different strengths, you can tailor the dose to fit your vibe, from a gentle 1.5 milligram microdose to their newest 15 milligram Sarah Longwell gummy for a more elevated experience. And if you like their out-of-office gummies, try the thing I've been really turning to, which is the out-of-office beverage, a refreshing alcohol-free alternative that's perfect for winding down on the couch or socializing with friends. Take advantage of Soul's Black Friday Cyber Monday deal now. For a limited time, get 40% off your entire order. Go to getsoul.com and use the code TheNextLevel. That's getsoul.com, promo code TheNextLevel for 40% off. Don't miss their best deal of the year. Thanks to Soul for supporting the show.
You're the bulwark. You're the bulwark. Institution right. Of the bulwark. And you're like, okay, well, this is a person who is at the center of these things, who made these sort of grotesque decisions that had real consequences. What's the news value in talking to them? And the news value is, in some way, like, to get to the truth. And she has no interest in giving the truth, right? Like, to the extent that you were, pressing her on what I thought were the most obvious dodges from her, like she's not saying Liz's name despite writing the whole book. Like, it's a little bit like when Scott Jennings is on CNN. Like, the reason that I think that it's ridiculous for CNN to keep having Scott Jennings on is not that I don't think that they should harbor a wide variety of views or not have MAGA people or not provide a platform. It's because he just comes on and lies the whole time. And I guess maybe I don't know how you have MAGA people on. Even, like, this is a fundamental
question. Well, they're also paying
question.
Him. I just that's want to say true. That's they very different. Paying them. That's they're true. Paying Scott that's Jennings true. To that's come right. on every night.
To come on every night and, like, lie to their audience, which I think is bad. She didn't provide the value, I think, that you want out of an interview there, because she had no interest in telling the truth. She clearly, I haven't read her book. It doesn't sound like she told the truth in her book. And the sort of – and I got to – one of the things that my impression of her with the crying and it felt totally like a here I'm the victim of all this. And there was no accountability. There was no taking ownership for what she did. And so I shared, I think, a lot of the audience's frustration with – I think if she had come on and she had said, yeah, I helped him. And it was a total breach of ethics. And not only was it a breach of ethics, and I wrote this book to take accountability for that. I can't work in journalism again because I have breached these ethics. Not just the ethics, the sleeping with the source stuff is – that obviously is a breach of ethics. But it's the helping him.
Right.
That this idea – I don't know whether she thought she was going to be first lady at some point or what, but like – the behavior is so bad and so reprehensible and such a breach that I guess I don't know if it would have helped to acknowledge up front that, like, I felt like we should have been clear that this was not – why should we trust anything she said? You know, like – or like, it's hard when somebody –
was that not the takeaway that people had? I think that was what people were left with.
No, I know. Yeah. But she had sort of already demonstrated that. I guess – and I don't know. I don't know what the obligation is of an interviewer to try to sort of – how much you can force somebody to take accountability for something they clearly aren't interested in taking accountability for. Yeah. But I do think that's the.
Well, it seems like you went the interview to convince her to come to the altar and change her true self. And I don't think that was going to happen. So, I mean, I think that the degree to which she is not taking accountability for herself was pretty well revealed, conversation.
All right, friends. Good show. Long show. Meat space show. We'll be back next time. Hit like, hit subscribe, follow the feed. Good luck, America.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.